Hello there, one and all. He's Ralph, I'm Peter. Let's do this. We're going to be talking about two of this week's hot stories today. Firstly, we're going to be talking about the autumn statement, which is red hot, obviously. And secondly, we're going to be talking a bit more about the whole drama that went on in OpenAI this week. So hopefully you have not been confined to a room with no windows or whatever during the course of this week. If so, just in case, because you can never be too careful. Jeremy Hunt, he actually unveiled the autumn statement this week, which basically is the last kind of major announcement really of the government on the economy for this, you know, this parliament, really, until the elections. There are going to be other things coming out as time goes on, but this is the major, like, roadmap, I guess, for, you know, for the rest of the period that this government is going to be in office. So, in general, I would say that my own impression of the autumn statement was that it was much broader based than I thought it would be. I thought it was a good thing that they didn't do things like reducing inheritance tax, because there were rumours it was going to do that sort of thing. I thought that would be a not a good thing to do in the run up to an election, because rightly or wrongly, that is seen as a rich person's tax, and to cut something like that would not have gone down very well to the electorate, in my opinion. So there was that, but just generally speaking, things like increasing minimum wage and doing various other bits and pieces, I thought looked like it was a lot more broader than I thought it was going to be. The idea was to try, I think one of the ideas is to, again, that the Conservatives are trying to distance themselves from Labour, or certainly make their more differences more distinct from Labour. The funny thing about it is that no one mentions the Lib Dems at all, really, in all of this thing. And the irony of all that is, of course, the Lib Dems were in power more recently than Labour has been. So, again, it's just interesting how things are panning out there. But anyway, I think that this is a broader base than I thought it was going to be. It's desire. I think that there's been as much giveaways from Sunak this time Jeremy Hunt this time, as they could have done. I mean, they were helped by some nice, you know, macro numbers like inflation coming down and things like that. I think overall it was okay. Nothing like this is ever perfect. But I think they made the best of a bad hand is what I thought of it. So what do you think, Ralph?
Well, yes, I think you summarized it perfectly. They made the best out of a bad hand. I mean, that's basically what it was. I mean, to me, the overall feel of it was that this perhaps was more a budget that reflected the fact that there is a political cycle than it was an economic budget. Because obviously, I mean, no prize for guessing, we all know this. I mean, next year is going to be election year, or at least it is going to be the year in which the next general election is going to be called. And they need to do this at some point. They are clearly on the back foot here, with Labour leading in the polls. And so they just need some wins. And it felt to me as if this budget was sort of squeezing out a little bit of the wins here, the possible wins which were gettable. And one thing was that they found some headway, some flexibility in what they could do, because the bill for for funding public debt was slightly lower than they were expecting it to be. And this is the biggest item in the sort of economic budget, just as mortgage costs are the biggest item in a household budget, and so they had some money to spend, so to speak, and they spend it on as much tax cuts as they could extend to the public and to businesses. And so the tax cuts which stand out here are the 2 percentage points reduction in national insurance on the personal side, and the reduction in business rates on the business side. But then, of course, also we can't say that this is a tax cutting budget, because these two eye-catching tax reductions are still embedded by several tax increases. On the personal side, the most important one here, I would say, is the further extension of the time during which the tax thresholds are not going to be increased. I mean, even I fell asleep when I heard myself me say that. That sounded very technical, but yeah, excellent. Let me just look up what that means.
Yeah.
But obviously, we all know what that means. I mean, basically, we have all various tax bans, and the tax bans normally actually go up with inflation, and that is an obvious thing why it would, because your salary and your wages go up with inflation, and if the tax bans were cut, were static at one particular point, then your salary would go up, it would come into the tax band, and then of course you are pushed into a higher tax band, and that is normally why the tax bands go up with inflation, in order to avoid that, and so that you could over your lifetime plan to be in a particular tax bracket. This is not what is happening here. The Chancellor has announced already that the tax bans are going to be fixed until 2028, and now they're going to be fixed for another 2 years until 2030, which means that with wage inflation and salary inflation going on, lots and lots more people are going to be pushed into the next higher tax bracket during this time. And that is, although it sounds as if it was an indirect and not quite real tax increase, it is very real when you are being when you are progressing as a person from one tax band to the next. And so that's the obvious one. Then there are some others which I'm not going to go through. They're all technical, but basically these two tax reductions are embedded in a range of tax increases. And yet I still would have to say that it is heartening to see that a government which has presided over a reduction in inflation is now going to offer and pass on some of the benefits to the economy, to the economical participants, to people like me, you and me, retail people, and to businesses as much as they can. I'm not being naive. It is, of course, motivated by wanting to stay in the game for the next election. And in the end, however, the population shouldn't care about this. I mean, we shouldn't care about this. If this is going to, well, I wouldn't say reinvigorate, but stimulate growth in the economy to some extent, then this is a good thing. There are also, I think, 110 policies by which growth is going to be stimulated. And I'm going to go through each of them now. That was a joke. I'm not going to do this.
You're a funny man.
I am so
That's you
funny.
are a funny man. Yeah,
Yeah,
I
I
always
am
knew
so
this. I
funny.
always knew this. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah, yeah.
I tell you, if I was a proper German, I would have actually done this
Yes.
now. Yeah, excellent. 5
Yeah.
hours later, oh, good point.
No, and another thing. No. No. Anyway, I guess.
But in the end, I think we all know what's going on here. The Tory government is scraping at the bottom of the barrel in order to basically generate some good news for themselves in order to stay in the game for the election. Now, some commentators have said that this might actually signal an early call or a call for an early election. I don't really think that is very likely, to be
No.
honest with you, because I think they will need to allow any hopefully ongoing positive development in economic metrics to feed through further for them to be able to extend some more benefits to the public. So by which I mean inflation coming down even more. The target is now 2.8% by the end of 2024, hopefully even followed or accompanied by some reductions in interest rates. And that all needs to happen first, I think, before they would like to call another general election. Weirdly and paradoxically, the only reason why you would call for an early election now is to benefit from the current pressure on the Labour Party, which is coming from a completely unrelated source, which is the geopolitical development in Israel and the commensurate polarization of the Labour Party, who, of course, have a lot of Muslim citizens in their constituents and who also have still traditional left-wing parties in the Labour Party who are calling for a ceasefire. All of this is creating friction in the Labour Party, which might actually take voters away from them. But I don't think that that is going to be the calculus of the Tory Party. So my money is on not calling for an early election. I think the budget, which we've seen, or the autumn statement, which we've seen, is all, I mean, to my reading, it bears more testimony to expecting a call for a general election late next year.
I mean, the thing is that obviously things can change, can't they? I mean, from where it looks right now, it's not looking great. But you never know. Like at the beginning, say in the first quarter of next year, let's say there's the ceasefires in the Middle East and in and in Ukraine. Let's say there could be though. If those events happen, the global economy might suddenly start recovering very quickly, and we could see a sudden uptick that might help everyone, and therefore make the UK government look good, perhaps. And then, if there's, let's say, another scandal, in the Labour Party, you never know. I mean, I think that all of that is highly unlikely to happen in the first quarter. But if it did, then yes, of course, the Conservatives may want to take advantage of confusion and take the initiative to have an election early because everyone's expecting it to be later. So who knows? I mean, I like I say, I agree with you, Ralph. I mean, it doesn't sound plausible to me that it's going to be in the spring, but you never know, and we'll obviously we'll just have to wait to find out. So anyway, let's go to the second subject. So OpenAI, I have to say that this has been one of the most entertaining stories I've written about since writing Watson's Daily. The reason why is because it was changing all the time. As I was writing Watson's Daily, I had to change it a few times, and I don't often have to do that. And new news kept on coming in and coming in, which is why, by the way, you should subscribe to Watson's Daily, because I think a lot of other, things of this, newsletters, whatever, reports of this ilk are generally a day old, right? So, I mean,
Was
I'm
there
writing.
a jingle in the background?
Yeah, I don't know. But I think that, a lot of, I think that so I write it on the day about that day, that what's coming up on that day. So so it was exciting. Someone asked me on a call, I think it was this week, they said, what are the most exciting stories that you've written about, or that you've experienced? And I would say so, the referendum, that's one of them. Because when I was writing that, again, that was another thing where lots of things were coming in, and because I write Watson's Daily from 4 a.m. in the morning, 4 a.m. in the morning, 4 a.m. or 4 in the morning, anyway, I could see all the results coming in. I could see all the results coming in, and I was really shocked with what happened. So that was a shocker. Trump winning the election was also a shocker. And then this, the Sam Altman firstly leaving AI, which we did briefly talk about in the last episode, but also what happened after that and his subsequent reinstatement and what the whole drama actually means for the prospects of OpenAI. So, I mean, I know, Ralph, you were very interested in this story as well.
Yeah, I must say this was one of the more exciting stories in the business world, and I read various articles and commentaries as the story unfolded. And as it unfolded, I now that the dust is settling, I think that we can talk about this and also in the context of perhaps where the entire world of AI might go in future, because you guys will remember we often talk on this program about the wider subject or question of whether and if so to which extent AI should be regulated and what regulation could be found. And in fact, just last week when we were talking briefly about OpenAI, when nobody knew what was going on, I was sort of saying that what might be happening here is something about sort of like conflict of opinions about how regulated or how controlled the research into the products which OpenAI is manufacturing ought to be. And I think it's turning out that that might have had something to do with this entire debacle. So my guess might actually have been right, but I got the emphasis wrong. I thought Sam Altman was more on the side of the regulators, and the other board members were perhaps more on the side of those who wish to develop new technology quickly. And it's turning out as if that might have actually been the other way around. But let me just step back from this a little bit and create the environment here. The company, as you may remember, was founded in 2015, and it was OpenAI was founded in 2015, and it was founded as a non-for-profit organization. And it had a motto, and I'll read this out to you, something like develop safe and beneficial AGI. So there are certain keywords here, safe and beneficial. Safe is obvious. That means it needs to be regulated in some form so that it doesn't actually branch out and create evil overlords who enslave us all. Beneficial is a key word here because this is supposed to generate products which are for the benefit of all of humanity. And AGI stands for Artificial General Intelligence. And although there is some confusion about what this actually means in the AI world, most people agree that this means it is intelligent, which is as intelligent as the most intelligent human being. So this is not average general intelligence. This is actually very advanced general intelligence. And OpenAI defines it to mean an intelligence that is capable of performing all tasks which are economically beneficial, whatever that might mean. I'm just creating the sound stage here, so to speak. So that is 2015. Then roll on 2019, and OpenAI included or branched out into the profit space because they understood that they were unable to A, attract researchers in the field if they couldn't actually pay them commensurate salaries, and second, importantly, investors in the platform, corporate investors. And so what they created is a subsidiary which was a for-profit subsidiary, and that created in 2019 the corporate structure which we now have, which is OpenAI Incorporated as the non-profit organization and OpenAI LLC as the for-profit subsidiary. So that's how it's set up, and you can see already that there is a shift over the first 5 years of the existence of this company away from a perhaps more altruistic, non-for-profit, benefit-for-humind philosophy, towards a more pragmatic and perhaps traditional capitalist view that you cannot actually do that unless you create a platform which investors, corporate investors, are able to invest in, and in doing so, providing the capital needed to provide these products. So that's a bit of a shift. Then I've written down on my sheet here one other key date, which was in May 2022. Sam Altman, or maybe I should say who the founder members were. This is Sam Altman as CEO, Greg Brockman as chairman, and then various others, including Ilya Sutskever, who is chief science officer. This person will be relevant in just a second. Elon Musk, who we all know, and a person called Helen Toner, and some other people. Now, in May 2022, Sam Altman and Greg Brockman posted recommendations for the governance of what they called superintelligence. And they were basically, in that article, they were basically saying, two things. When, first of all, we're sort of moving on already from AGI to the next state, which is superintelligence. Superintelligence is intelligence which is more intelligent than the most intelligent human being. And they understood that this type of capability had to be contained by some form of regulation. And they were putting forward certain ideas of what that regulation might be. So this is May 2022. And now we're moving on to where we are, where the saga begins. And this is November. Well, this is just recently. Of course, this is November 2022. And what happened here is that the board of directors, importantly, Helen Toner, Ilya Sutskever, Adam D'Angelo, and Tasha McCauley wrote a letter saying that Sam Altman ought to be sacked. I need to be careful here because Adam D'Angelo didn't actually sign this letter, but the three others did, and the rest of the board did. So they moved to remove, that's a weird turn of phrase, they moved to sack Sam Altman as CEO from the board, and Greg Brockman as chairman resigned in solidarity. So I go through the steps first, and then I sort of maybe add some interpretation of what happened. This happened on Friday. Then Sam Altman, with various friends and influential colleagues in the AI tech world, plus Microsoft, the influential owner, put pressure on the board to renegotiate with Sam Altman. These renegotiations came to nothing. And I think it was Sunday, or maybe, yes, Sunday, that 702 employees out of a total workforce of something like 780 at OpenAI signed an open letter urging the board to re-employ Sam Altman. That's how you see it in the press. It is actually interesting to read that letter. It's not hard to find. It's on the internet.
Yes.
And so I'm going to read some of it to you, just to make sure that what we understand, that what we're talking about here. So it says, it starts off, to the board of directors at OpenAI. We, the employees of OpenAI, have developed the best models and pushed the field to new frontiers. I'm just reading this out to make sure that we understand who is talking here. We, the employees of OpenAI, that is the people talking here. These are the signatories. And this then continues, and it says, you're being the board of directors. So this is we, the employees, talk to you, the board of directors. And we are saying your actions have made it obvious that you are incapable of overseeing open AI. We are unable to work for or with people that lack competence, judgment, and care for our mission and employees. I mean, tell me what you really think. That's pretty clear, isn't it? I mean, that's pretty much right between the eyes. Mm-hmm. Then they continue to talk about the fact that they might all resign and join Microsoft, which is something which we've seen in the press. And then they continue to say, we will take this step, meaning resigning, imminently, unless all current board members resign and the board appoints two new lead independent directors, such as Brett Taylor and Will Hurt, and reinstates Sam Altman and Greg Brockman. Undersigned, 702 people, the first of which is Mira Murati, who used to be the chief technology officer, still is, of OpenAI. And on number 12, we find Ilya Sutskever. Now, this is one of the farcical developments here. Ilya Sutskever was one of the people who just on Friday signed a statement saying, Sam Altman, you have to go. We sack you. We don't believe you are tenable. 2 days later, he signs a letter where he basically said, I have been incompetent. Because he is on the board. I mean, this is absolutely amazing. So basically, there we are.
Yeah. Now, I read, by the way, that somewhere that Greg Brockman's wife was in tears, appealing to Ilya Sutskever not to go ahead with what he was doing, and he still went ahead with it anyway. And yeah. then he turns around on that. I mean.
Later, he says, I am incapable of overseeing OpenAI. Yeah. That's not really what that says.
Yeah, talk about flaky. I mean, that's going to be awkward, isn't it? In the office.
Yeah, healthy. Yeah. How's it going?
I was going on the coffee run. Yeah, no, I'm not asking you. I'm asking everyone else. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
You have a meeting and it's like, who's getting the coffees? Ilya is sort of like looking down. Ilya, you're still here? Yeah. I was just going.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, he's still on the board. But so I don't want to push this too far. I don't know these people. I don't look behind it. I just found it interesting
Sorry, did you say, so Helen Toner left, right?
Yeah, Helen Toner left. I'm going to get to that in a second.
So you could say that the toner ran out. I just thought of that right at the beginning of what you were saying, and then I thought I had to shoehorn it in there somehow in a subtle way without anyone realizing. So I think I did a good job there.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
Thank you.
Moving on.
Yes. Sorry. Carry on. Please carry on.
Yes. So like I said, I'm not going to push this so far. This has got farcical elements, clearly. What is going on? So basically, the old board has now resigned because there was a lot of pressure from basically everybody in the company who have threatened to resign, and then there wouldn't have been any more company. And also the influential investors, in particular Microsoft, have at that time threatened legal action against the board. And so when that sort of thing happens, your position is unsustainable and out the door you go. So the old board was Ilya Sutskever, and he's still on the board, interestingly enough. And then we have Helen Toner, who was the old board and who is now gone, as you have so metaphorically alluded to earlier. Now, the reason that I've singled out Helen Toner is just one reason, because Helen Toner co-authored an article maybe 2 years ago in which she discussed a lack of care in generating the right safety for the products which OpenAI manufactured. So you see, there is a theme which is clearly clarifying itself here. On the one hand, there are people who believe that the products that OpenAI manufactured are perhaps not safe enough. They are not regulated enough. The development is not controlled enough. And on the other hand, there are people who perhaps are more embracing a view that in order to generate the benefit to mankind, which is still in the mission statement of OpenAI, is best served by allowing corporate investors in, who are providing the capital needed to develop these products, and then continue at a brisk pace with the development of this product, which is rather than slowing down for the benefit of more regulation. And I think these two philosophies might well have come to a clash in this particular corporate saga. If this interpretation is correct, then we can say that the side which is on the corporate side and on the side which wishes to focus on the development of these products has won. And those who are more on the regulatory side have left. And if this interpretation is not too simplistic, then that, I think, is a very interesting development, because it may well stand in as a you may well be able to generalize from here where the world of AI is going to go in general, because this is the question which we discussed in previous shows, where we talked about regulation and how it's going to shape up, how much of it will there be, and how soon will it be implemented. And it looks to me now that the way forward is probably the way forward we were all silently expecting. AI is going to be owned just like any other product factors in open market economies by the corporations which develop them. They are going to be funded by influential investors, and regulation might be an afterthought, but one would hope, that developers will still understand that regulation is important. We certainly do not hear from Sam Altman words like this is not important at all, we just need to focus on the product side. Let's remember that in May 2022 he co-authored with Brockman the article which I mentioned, where they talk about recommendations for regulation of AI. But I think the journey is clear where this is going to end up. We are going to end up with influential, potentially immensely powerful new technology, which is going to be owned by corporations and which one hopes is going to be embedded in an envelope of responsible regulation. But I think the first part of the sentence is more certain than the latter part.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the whole incident and the way that it rolled, the way that it developed, I think it highlights. I think it was probably actually a good thing for OpenAI. I think as things turned out, because it really has aligned a lot of people. It's swept out some of the doubters. So on the one hand, it's a good thing, because this is proof that everyone is on the same page who is still there. But on the other hand, it does, you do wonder whether, because the camp that was a bit more cautious are now gone, so what is OpenAI going to become now? Sam Altman, it's funny, really. I find it difficult to work him out, because on the one hand, he's very much, we need to make sure it's developed safely, et cetera, et cetera. But then on the other side, he really, you know, he wants to make money from it. You know, he wants the company to make money from it. And so, yes, I mean, I don't know, there's these sort of conflicting images, I guess, of Sam Altman. But anyway, yeah, I think, like I say, I think what this will do, this is galvanize support within the company. That may mean that they develop things more quickly, and perhaps this whole desire for commerciality will mean that these developments will come to market quicker than they perhaps otherwise might have done.
Yeah, I think that also. I mean, I don't know Sam Altman from Adam, of course, and I wouldn't want to
No, Adam's all right, actually. I quite like Adam. Yeah. So.
suggest that I have an insight here, but it looks to me as if he is aware that regulation is important, of course, but it sounds more like an afterthought and maybe a little bit of lip service. I mean, my feeling is that he is a passionate engineer, a very highly bright person who wants to work and further the field of AI with commercially relevant products. And let us not forget again this article in May 2022, where they talk about regulation, yes, but they talk about it in the context of super intelligence. And I think this is probably where the party is going to go also. Just wanting to mention perhaps one more detail from this morass of information which we saw. There was a Reuters article which claimed to have seen an internal email in which reference was made to a project labeled Q Plus, I think, a project which was
Oh, yeah.
said to have been to have seen a breakthrough of some monumental proportion. And this is of course all conspiracy theory. We know nothing about this, and we don't know what it is. But it is of course possible that Sam Altman et al. Are pushing towards the extension of boundaries in this field. Superintelligence certainly is the step after AGI, the aspirational target after AGI. AGI is the next frontier. And my guess is that Sam Altman and people of his mental setup are probably more interested in pushing the technological frontiers and creating the projects, the products, than talking about regulation first and then creating a straitjacket or constraints which will or a straitjacket which will constrain them in the development of these products. So product first, regulation next. I think that's the sort of spirit which is now more firmly embedded at OpenAI. But let's also not forget that this is not a fringe group of people. 702 out of 780
I think it was
employees.
more than that. In the end, you know, I'm pretty sure that it was more than that. It was, yeah,
It may be that
it's astounding.
this particular letter, which we do have as evidence, has 702 signatories. The press is talking about 738, but it doesn't really matter. 700 out of 800 people, that's a vast majority.
It is.
And
It,
so let's not
that's amazing.
play. So
That is amazing, isn't it?
my point is, this is a majority of people of OpenAI who wanted to push a board out, which allegedly in terms of my interpretation, was perhaps going too cautiously, was perhaps moving towards a regulatory constraining the capabilities of OpenAI. And there we are, and we will see what that means for OpenAI, for the products which we which we can expect from them, which we will see from them, and by extension for how the artificial intelligence world is going to develop. And like I said, I foresee a corporate world which owns the products and thinks about regulation later. And I think, to be honest with, I mean, this is sort of what I've always expected. This is the way of the world in free market societies, in free market economies, that's how this is going to develop.
Absolutely. So obviously more to see, not quite at the moment. I mean, interesting. I mean, they're talking about an investigation and all that kind of stuff. So,
Yes.
well, whether or not how much of that is going to be made public knowledge, don't know. But it's a very, I think, it's been a very, it's been probably one of the most exciting sort of corporate developments for quite some time, I think. So,
Yeah,
there we
absolutely.
go. But anyway, I think we better stop it there. But so thank you very much, Ralph, as always, for your incredible insight and overall genius, of course. I apologize profusely for the horrendous toner dad joke attempt earlier on in this. So I do apologize for that. Yeah, thank you very much. And I hope you, whatever you're doing out there watching or listening to this, I hope you're enjoying yourself. And yeah, we'll be back again very soon.
Yes,
Many
thanks guys
thanks.
for listening. Thank you. Bye.
Many thanks. Bye.